Hello and welcome to Every Day is Saturday. We just completed week 5 in college football. My name is Sam Moss. I am joined by my esteemed co-host, Cameron Weinert, once again. And we are here to talk about the week that was and the week that is ahead in college football. Let's jump into overview of what we saw from the model this past week. The model crushed it this week, went 65%. We had a little hypothesis from last week that the model would do well in games where ranked teams were playing and when Power 5 teams were playing. And the model did okay, but not necessarily as well as we saw the week before. I personally think we still need more sample size to see that flesh out, but from what we did see is that the group of 5 absolutely killed it in the model, the group of 5 games. And my new hypothesis that's emerged from seeing this new set of data is that group of 5 games could potentially get better as the season goes on and as more of this season's data is integrated into the model. And I think that the reason behind that is group of 5 teams are probably more likely to not only vary week to week, which is what we discussed last week on the show, but probably more likely to vary heavily year to year, whereas the more traditional Power 5 teams and ranked opponents or ranked teams that are playing year after year are probably playing more consistent. But overall, it was a great week picking games. Model absolutely killed it, so that was good to see. Cameron, I think you know what time it is.
I think it's time to get this show on the road. I also agree. I ran some more analysis on the model with the ranked teams over the course of the past 5 weeks. And when one ranked team is playing, that's been a total of 80 games. The model is right 60% of the time. And when two ranked teams are playing, the model is right 2/3 of the time.
Yeah.
So it's cool to see us just analyze and understand where we're finding some really good opportunities with the model. And I just get to build Excel spreadsheets, which I love.
That's right. And I'm also excited to now see if, as we get more of this season's data integrated in, we have some new data that came in from this past week into the model for the week ahead. I'm excited to see if the group of 5 teams continue to improve, because if that happens and we're also hitting on the Power 5 teams, well, that's the whole dang FBS. So
yeah,
that's when you know you're doing well. Cam, let's jump into what we loved and what we hated from week 5. I'll let you start. Mm-hmm. What'd you love this past week?
I loved a couple of things, both around head coaches. One, I watched most of the first half of the Alabama Ole Miss game, and I just really liked Matt Luke's demeanor on the Ole Miss sideline, especially in the first quarter. He was hyping his team up. He got in the face of his defense to hype them up to go stop Alabama. It didn't work, but I love seeing the energy from the head coach. I also liked seeing him carry an injured player off the field. The injury didn't look too great. You rarely see that in a head coach, as to be the one who carries his player off the field. He just looks like a fun guy to play for. I know they lost to Alabama by 28 points.
They beat the spread.
But they beat the spread, which is what we care about. That was really interesting. And then the other head coach that I loved was Mac Brown, just going for it for 2 against Clemson. And I will talk a little bit more about that in the next segment. Our loyal viewers will know where I might be going with this. But Sam, what did you love for the past?
Yeah, that Mac Brown going for 2 call I thought was super gutsy. And I thought it's the right call. I mean, we were texting back and forth about it while it was happening. And I was like, North Carolina's 2-2. They're playing at home against number 1. Just go for 2. Just try to win the game. Like,
and what do you have to lose?
Yeah, exactly. The 2 things that I love this past week, first off, I got to give a lot of love to Ohio State. They absolutely dominated every aspect of the game they played against Nebraska this past weekend. I don't know why Vegas likes Nebraska so much, just as a little aside. Earlier this year,
why was game day at that game?
I don't know. Earlier this year when they played Colorado, they were favored by 7. They ended up losing that game. They were only underdogs by 17 against Ohio State. Which just was really interesting to me. The model had Ohio State as a 24-point favorite, which is probably about where they should have been in Vegas. Ohio State, they're an elite team this year. The data is starting to prove that out. Ohio State is actually tied with Alabama at number one right now in the model. It's pretty cool to see Ohio State jumping up. Justin Fields, the transfer quarterback from Georgia, has been absolutely dominant. And Ohio State, they're a team to keep watching out for. They're in that upper echelon right now, like I mentioned, with Alabama, Georgia, and Clemson. And then the second team that I loved was Baylor. They proved me right and Vegas wrong, just barely. They got up 20-0. I was watching that game. They almost gave that game away to Iowa State, but they pulled it together, got a late game-winning field goal to win at home 23-21. So kudos to the Bears. They are 4-0 now, and they got their first Big 12 win. Cam, what are some things that you hated from this past weekend?
Well, I alluded to it from the part that I loved with Mac Brown going for two, which I love. That's awesome. I hated the play call. It reminded me a lot of Texas A&M's play call last year, which the only difference was A&M was rolling to the right and looking to pass. UNC was rolling to the right looking for a run with some sort of triple option play. I don't understand why you would immediately shrink half of your field and make it even smaller the more steps the quarterback runs to the sideline. I haven't understood that when coaches go for two. If that's an RPO play, I might be able to get behind the call if you give your quarterback a chance to throw the ball into the end zone. But overall, it wasn't good. I was watching it on a cell phone driving to go babysit in Denton, and it was, I wasn't driving, my girlfriend was driving, but it was, I just looked at it, I was like, this is mind-boggling why you would call that play. So I really didn't like that play, and I also didn't like all the hype around Nebraska. I get that they're trying to like rally them back from their glory days in like the 80s and 90s, but as a whole, I think it was a little over the top from just ESPN to try to hype up the viewership of that game of like, oh yeah, Nebraska's back. These are two elite teams. No, this is one elite team and one team that really hasn't done anything in the past 20 years. So, yeah. But that's just the ESPN hype machine, man. Like we have seen it time and time again. They're just fighting for viewer eyeballs. That is media today. So can't blame them completely. I just didn't like it.
Right. And going back to the going for two call for North Carolina, I completely agree. I thought it was not a good call. I think that some of these teams have tried to develop these long developing two-point conversion plays. You mentioned that was a great example of A&M versus Clemson last year to go for two to try to send that game into overtime. You have a long rollout to the right. And I just think it gives, one, you're playing a Clemson defensive line that tends to be pretty good. And then you give the Clemson secondary, which is also good, more time to just keep recovering. And I think you got to develop something a lot quicker, try to get the ball out of your hands quick in those kind of situations, get a mismatch. But, you know, it is what it is. They played a good game overall, but just couldn't get it done. The one thing that I hated from this past weekend was the A&M and Arkansas announcers.
Amen. Did you miss that text?
I think so.
Yeah, I called dibs on having this be the my hated portion, but I looked at our show notes and I saw that you had it. So I guess you don't honor dibs, but go ahead.
Well, I've been pretty busy all weekend trying to get my life in order, but these guys were hot garbage. Mark Jones and Dan Dabrowski, you guys really need to step up your game. They were constantly saying that A&M players were on Arkansas. They were using Nick Starkel's 2017 stats as his current stats. They were many times just generally unaware of what was happening on the field during the game. And to me, that's just a really pitiful effort all around. You are devoted to one game for that entire week of prep, and they were made a ton of mistakes. I wish that we had some sort of accountability system for these announcers that did so bad. And look, it wasn't just me not being pleased with the game. It really had nothing to do with that. It was from the very beginning of that game, I noticed something was off with these guys, and they followed trend on that for the rest of the game. So y'all need to step it up.
Yeah, I agree. I knew it was going to be a rough one to listen to when they opened up not talking about anything regarding football, but they talked about Nick Starkel's Justin Bieber t-shirt, and the sideline reporter dropped not one, not two, but three Justin Bieber song lyric references, and I just sat there wishing I could watch the game on mute, but alas, did not, and also picked up on a lot of those just misses. And it goes not just those two guys with the mic and the girl down on the sidelines. That goes to the production team down in the van, across the board, just rough, rough day for them.
What did it in for me, or what clued me in early on in the game, was when Nick Starkel took his first series as quarterback, and they clearly had a graphic on the screen in big letters that said 2017 stats at Texas A&M. And Mark Jones immediately proceeds to say, Nick Starkel has thrown for 1,400 yards, 14 touchdowns, and 6 interceptions this year, with 5 of those being last week against San Jose State. And I was like, Mark, we got to do much better than this, man. It kept going.
Yeah.
Well, let's pivot and jump into top performers of the week. Cam, I'll let you take this one first. Who is your top performer of week 5?
Yeah, so I was looking for a top performer and came across Tanner Morgan at Minnesota. Calling back to the loyalists again, my Big Ten dark horse, if you remember episode 1, by the way, who is looking good at 4-0 on the season. Tanner Morgan went 21 for 22. That is a completion percentage of 95.5% against Purdue, and threw for 4 touchdowns. I got to give props to Tanner Morgan. Minnesota's 4-0. They really haven't played anybody yet, so I'm not going to say I told you so. Look out for this dark horse. But it was good to see. And just whoever you play, that stat line is really impressive. So way to go, Tanner. You're my top performer of the week. You were 4 yards away from throwing for 400, but that's on your receivers for not running harder.
That's that one incompletion that totally wasn't your fault.
Yeah.
My top performer of the week was Devonta Smith, the wide receiver from Alabama. This guy reeled in 11 catches. He had 278 yards receiving, and he had 5 touchdowns. That, my friend, is one of the most impressive receiver performances I have witnessed in recent memory. And it got me thinking, it is super interesting how much Nick Saban has adapted after being very outspoken earlier this decade about the negative effects of up-tempo and spread offenses. Could be a potential future segment we do. Ooh. Sounds like an off-season segment. But I just got to thinking, man, he has completely changed his tune. And that Alabama offense, they're good, and they're going to steamroll some teams this year. They already are doing that.
Yeah. Alabama is scary good once again. Clemson looked beatable against North Carolina. So right now, Alabama, Ohio State, and Oklahoma, I would say, are my top 3. And then LSU is not far behind.
Yeah, that's a pretty solid group right there. And I looked at a new way of doing the most improved teams and biggest drop-off year over year. So for the most improved teams, I looked at any team that had at least a 20% improvement year over year in the top 50 overall teams in the rankings. And then for the biggest drop-off, I looked at any team that had at least a 10% drop-off year over year in the top 60. And the reason I did a different threshold for the drop-off is because if you think about it logically, you know, top 60 teams, the top half of the FBS, there's not going to be many teams that have a big drop-off because they're good. So that was my criteria here. Most improved teams year over year. This is in order. SMU number 1, Wisconsin 2, Ohio State 3, Auburn 4, Air Force 5, Louisiana Lafayette 6, Tulane 7, UNC 8, and Oklahoma State 9. And then the biggest drop-offs year over year have been 1, Michigan, biggest drop-off in the top 60, 2, Washington State, 3, Mississippi State, 4, South Carolina, 5, Kentucky, 6, your boys, Minnesota, the Golden Gophers.
The model
and 7 is Temple. And before we jump in to picking week 6 games, we got to talk about it. We're Aggies. We talk about the A&M game every week. The A&M recap against Arkansas in Jerry World this past Saturday. Cam, what were your overall general thoughts and feelings about this game?
Well, I've tried to remove myself from any and all feelings regarding this game because it's just close every single year, and it's really annoying, to be honest, as a fan. So I try not to have too many feelings in regards to this game. But as a whole, looking holistically at A&M, there's clearly a problem with the offensive line. They're struggling to get the ball moving at all. They had 89 total rushing yards and on 33 carries, so less than 3 yards a carry.
Not good.
not good. They're the bright spot. I do think they finally have hit a groove with their receivers. We were texting back and forth. I wanted to do a segment on the receivers, but mainly that was just after Kendrick Rogers stopped running on his route, which would have been another big play on the first drive of the game. And then after that, he really wasn't in the game. They brought in Anaya Smith, who went for 80 yards and a touchdown, who seems to be a spark plug. He's a freshman that no one really saw. He wasn't really on the radar. But, hey, a win is a win, so I will gladly take it. But I really am worried about our offensive line as we get into the meat of SEC play. It was not pretty.
Yeah, and I'm going to say this. I'll probably end up saying this every week because you're going to have A&M fans freaking out week over week because A&M is going to play a lot of close games this year.
Yep.
And I said it at the very beginning of the year when we were doing season predictions, and I said 7-5 is A&M's offensive line is the biggest thing that I'm looking for because they have depth at a lot of the other positions. And we're kind of seeing that play out. If you don't have a good line and you can't get a running game established because of that, and you can't protect your quarterback against good defensive lines, which you're going to face in the SEC, you're going to have trouble winning games. But A&M, they have a lot of talent. And they pulled it out against Arkansas. It wasn't pretty. They had a lot of crucial mistakes, whether it be penalties, whether it be that botched handoff, turnover, scoop and score. It was ugly to watch that game. And I liked how you said I kind of separate your, or you said you separate your emotion from this game year after year. Well, I've kind of applied that to season, this season, because I didn't really have a lot of high hopes coming in. And I've been very like even keeled when I think about A&M, when I'm watching the games, I'm like, this is kind of what I expected. I'm hoping that they start hitting a little bit of a groove. The bye week comes at a good time. They're going to get curb stomped by Alabama. So I guess we don't even need to record in a couple weeks when that game takes place. But
no, we won't talk. That game will not be spoken about. We won't pick it. We won't even acknowledge it will happen.
I'm going to pick it. A&M's going to get curb stomped in that game. But there's going to be a stretch of three or four games right after that that's going to be kind of a gut check for them and really, in my mind, kind of defined the rest of the year. And I've had people ask me questions about, well, do you think that Jimbo Fisher was worth it, or do you think Jimbo Fisher is overrated, or wow, A&M paid him $75 million? And my thought process on that is this, very logical thought process. You had one of four active coaches that had won a national championship. You pay that guy, if you have the ability to, which A&M does, a 10-year contract, $75 million, to come be your coach of your football team. Yep. That is logically a good decision. The second part of that is, no, I do not think Jimbo Fisher is overrated. I think Jimbo Fisher is a really good coach. You can see that through the success that he had at Florida State. You can see that through what he did last year at A&M. And I think you got to look at it this way. It's his second year. He has one recruiting class in his system that he brought in. A&M fans don't like to hear this, but it's going to take a little bit of time to transition that thing over. And when you look at someone like Dabo Swinney at Clemson, I'm not saying this is super comparable. They're different conferences, different situations. Dabo won like six games his second year and seven his third year. So give it some time. It's not time to run for the hills. I know you have people all over that are fans of different schools trying to tell you otherwise. But hey, just enjoy the ride. You're not going to because you're A&M fans. I've been here before. But just
we know what to expect.
try to sit back and enjoy the ride and just let this thing play out before we all start running for the cliffs. I cannot look at any A&M Twitter, any A&M social media, any A&M websites while games are going on because people act a fool. And that's all I have to say about that.
Yeah, I agree. One final stat in regards to the struggles on our offensive line. Last week, or 2 weeks ago now, against San Jose State, Arkansas got one sack. This past week, they got four. So that's just something that we really need to improve on. Not too happy with it. But yeah, I agree. I actually walked into an open house today just to see if it would be a house that I'd be interested in to buy. And the realtor's husband was in there, and he started talking to me about A&M. He's like, I don't know if I can believe in Jimbo Fisher. And I was like, well, I don't know if I can believe in our offensive line. So I think we'll be okay. That's a data point as to there are people out there who do not, that are already jumping off the Jimbo bandwagon, and that's just ridiculous.
Yep. I agree 100% with you. There's a lot of football left to play. There's going to be a lot of seasons left for Jimbo. He's had one recruiting class. Everyone just relax.
Yeah. All right. We'll be good.
Let's jump into week six games. A&M has a bye this week, so we won't be talking about them, but we have two statistical outlier games and a couple SEC matchups that we're going to talk about. Cameron, why don't you go ahead and jump into our first matchup of the week?
So our first matchup of the week is a statistical outlier. It is Iowa at Michigan. Michigan is favored 5.5 in Vegas, whereas Iowa is favored by 3 points in the model. First off, this is the big Fox game at 11 a.m. this season for the network, and I checked. In week one, it was the number 5 rated game, and Ohio State played. In week three, it was the number 5 rated game, and Ohio State played. However, in week two, it was number 3 with Michigan, and in week four, it was number 2, and it was Michigan. So, enjoy that win over the Buckeyes, Michigan fans, because it will... I don't understand the internet. Enjoy that win over the Buckeyes, Michigan fans, and the ratings. It will be your only victory against them this year. In Michigan's two bad games this season, Wisconsin and Army, both teams, Wisconsin and Army, ran the ball over 50 times. Wisconsin, in particular, scored 3 touchdowns on its first 4 possessions. They ran the ball 22 times on those 4 possessions, and they passed the ball 5 times. I get that they have Jonathan Taylor, but they really spread the ball throughout their running back stable on those 4 possessions. And I wonder if teams are starting to pick up that Michigan's run defense might not be as vaunted as people assume. So that is just something to watch. That's something that I'll be watching in this game is Michigan's run defense versus Iowa. Iowa runs on average 42 attempts per game, which is pretty even. They also throw the ball 32 times a game, so it's a balanced attack, and I'll be interested to see if my hypothesis runs true that Iowa will key in on the run more. They have 3 running backs who have over 200 yards already this season, so they have multiple options there. However, Michigan did get back on track with a 52-0 win over Rutgers. Rutgers fired its head coach today. Iowa only beat Rutgers 30-0. So if we're getting transitive property here, Michigan's winning this game by 22. But we don't do that. We don't do transitive properties here on every day of Saturday. I do think Michigan will win this game. I do think Michigan will win this game by more than 5.5. So I'm going to pick them. I disagree with the model on this. I just don't think it will be 22. Sam, what do you think?
Interesting takes there. I like it. Michigan, they come into this game. They're under a lot of fire for some inept performances against Army, and you mentioned it, Wisconsin. Jim Harbaugh, hot seat talk is already in full swing in Ann Arbor. Even though he's won 10 games multiple times since he's been there, and the previous coaches that were there before him really struggled, expectations are just sky high at Michigan. It is what it is. It's a blue blood program that always expects championships. When I look at this game, though, the numbers really don't favor Michigan. Of the top 60 teams in the model, Michigan has regressed the most since last year. Their offense really struggles, like really, really struggles. I know they put up 52 on Rutgers, but it's Rutgers. They're 83rd in the country in offensive efficiency and only 44th in defense. So they're not really fielding a dominant defensive unit like they normally do. Iowa, on the other hand, they've looked solid on both sides of the ball thus far in 2019. They're 25th in defensive efficiency, 33rd in offensive efficiency. I really think this game favors Iowa, and the model agrees. I'm taking Iowa outright here. I think they're going to actually win this game. Just a quick note that Iowa is actually 18th in the country in the model, whereas Michigan is 31st. So there is a little bit of a gap between the two teams when you dive into the numbers. So I'm going to take the Hawkeyes and agree with the model here. Our next game on the docket, going to be an interesting one, I think, for a lot of people, but it's Utah State at LSU in Baton Rouge. Vegas highly favors LSU at home in this game, 24 points, but why wouldn't they? LSU's fifth overall in the model. They're playing at home in the toughest environment to play in college football. But Utah State's actually a decent team. They're 25th in the model, and we've talked about them several times this year. They have one of the best quarterbacks in the Mountain West, so this will be a great battle between two good quarterbacks because you have Joe Burrow on the LSU side. LSU's clearly the better team here, but I'm actually concerned about the Tigers' defense. I've seen countless teams go so up-tempo and score so fast like LSU is now doing that it's actually had a detrimental effect on the defense getting off the field and stopping other teams, especially late in games. I think LSU could be up in the 20s here late in the game but allow some Utah State scores to get them back down below that line. And I'm actually going to agree with the model here, which has LSU only winning by 15. I'm going to say Utah State wins against the spread. And what may be surprising to some people, and this doesn't mean that LSU isn't a great team or that LSU is not deserving of a top five ranking or anything. I just think this game's going to be a little bit closer than most think. And LSU's defense, like I mentioned last week, is something to watch going forward throughout this year, especially that defensive side of the ball. Cam, what are your thoughts on this game?
Yeah, I think those are really good takes. It's been fun to watch LSU this season. Something that I'm keying in on is games with large spreads like this. The first thing I look for is if the team can put up points, which is why I didn't pick A&M this past week against Arkansas and won against the spread. I did. A&M didn't. And LSU is averaging 57.8 points per game this season behind Joe. That guy can throw Burrow. That's my new nickname for him. I'm going to try it out, see if it sticks. And I just really like LSU's offense. I agree with everything that you're saying in regards to LSU's defense potentially getting tired. However, they do have a lot of depth on the back end. They have all those recruits. This is a good game for them to get the freshmen in to get reps. Now, I understand by saying that they could easily screw up and allow a big play. However, I just haven't been super impressed with Utah State as I was looking back at all their games. They haven't faced a team like LSU. They haven't played in a place like Death Valley. Their only game that I really saw as significant was a 38-35 loss to Wake Forest, who is decent, but they are no Joe Burrow. I actually really like LSU in this game. I think they will win by more than 24 points. They will cover or beat the spread, or I'm still learning the lingo in week six. That's my New Year's resolution, is to learn betting lingo. But yeah, give me LSU this week. I like, in these large spread games, teams that can put up points. So yeah, I'm going to go with LSU.
All right, what's the next game on the docket?
Next game, we're switching over to just straight SEC games. There's not many SEC games this week. It seems like a lot of teams are taking their bye week, but there is one really big game out in Gainesville, Florida. It is Auburn at Florida. Vegas favors Auburn by 3 points, and the model favors Auburn by 7 points. Sam, who do you got?
Look, Auburn's the real deal here. I said that during last week's episode where I said I don't think Auburn will win the SEC or even the West, but of that group of Florida, Georgia, LSU, and Bama that they play, they're going to ruin at least two of those teams' seasons, in my mind. Yep. Florida is good, but they're not great this year. Mm-hmm. This game is in the swamp, so Florida has that home field factor. Vegas still likes Auburn on the road, as you said. They are favored by 3. I think that's a pretty low line. I think Auburn wins this one by about 10 on the road. Auburn is good. They haven't had to put Bo Nix in many tough spots outside of that Oregon game. And I think Florida is vulnerable. They haven't really played a upper echelon team so far this year. They're coming in with Kyle Trask as their quarterback. I like Auburn beating Kyle Trask and that Gator offensive line with the dominant Auburn defensive line. And I think Auburn is going to cover here. What do you think?
Yeah, at first glance, to the just casual viewer, Florida looks stout on defense with 8.8 points per game allowed. And then you got to look at who they played. They played UTM, zero, who they shut out. They shut out Townsend.
FCS team.
Yeah, two just cupcakes. And then they only allowed Tennessee to score 3 points, another cupcake. And then they let up 20 points to Miami and 21 points to Kentucky, who are very just average teams this season. So I think Florida is most likely overrated. And so I don't think Florida is as good as people think they are. Kyle Trask, he got brought in the wake of Felipe Franks' injury, but he really hasn't played anyone yet since that injury when he got brought in the Kentucky game. So Auburn's big question will be their quarterback. Can Bo Nix carry the momentum he had from the last game versus Mississippi State? He went for 335 yards, two TDs, and no picks, as well as over 50 yards rushing and a touchdown. I think Bo Nix finally has allowed the game to slow down from what it seems like to me with how he played in the Mississippi State game. I know there's a lot of question marks around him, but people got to remember he is a freshman. He was a senior in high school last year playing up against just absolute scrubs in high school. And so that's a big step to go play Oregon, Texas A&M, Mississippi State. So it looks like the game is slowing down for Bo Nix, and we will see how he does in a hostile environment like you alluded to in Gainesville. I, too, think Auburn will win this game by more than a touchdown. So I like Auburn in this one. Great pick, Model. Great pick, Sam.
Yeah, Bo Nix, he definitely seemed to be settled in a little bit more throwing the ball against Mississippi State. He made some really good throws. I don't know if you watched the game, but I was watching it, and some of the throws that he was making, he was not making during the first three games of the year. So good for Auburn to see him keep progressing like that. And you know that he will as a freshman. He's a talented guy. He's going to end up being a really good quarterback. Our last game on the docket, we really struggled to pick four total games to pick during this week because there's honestly not that many good games during week six this year for whatever reason. A lot of really wild and variable point spreads all over the place. Not really many close ones like that Auburn-Florida matchup. But we got Vanderbilt traveling to Oxford, Mississippi to take on Ole Miss. Ole Miss came out with a true freshman starter at quarterback last week against Alabama, John Rhys Plumlee. And he started to make some noise early in that game. He was moving the ball, running against that Alabama defense. Ole Miss was actually up in the first quarter against Bama, which is not necessarily an easy thing to do. Overall, though, Ole Miss, they're below average on offense and defense this season when you look at their efficiency metrics. But I like this new element of John Rhys Plumlee and what he can do with his legs. And that really intrigues me in this matchup because Vanderbilt's defensive efficiency is one of the lowest in the country this year. And Vanderbilt's just not a good team at all this season. I like Ole Miss covering this game on the legs of Plumlee against a very porous Vandy defense. Vegas has Ole Miss by 7. I think they're going to win by more than that at home against a bad Vanderbilt defense. Cameron, what are your thoughts on this matchup?
Yeah, we are digging deep into the SEC schedule to see what's happening in the conference. And no, that's not an indictment on scheduling at all. Teams are in bye weeks, so do not send
it. That's across the whole FBS. There's not great games, not just SEC.
Yeah, and so I really, like you alluded to, I really liked Ole Miss's freshman's grit in the game. He ran for over 100 yards and got a touchdown. He also had 141 yards through the air. Disregard the 35.7% completion rate. He's no Tanner Morgan from Minnesota. That's reminded. But looking at this game,
maybe get him a warm-up game against that team you like in Canada. I always forget what they're called.
The Colt?
Yeah.
Well, I don't like them. I like Portland State.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, he needs a warm-up game against Portland State. You know, like Arkansas thought they were going to have. I'm really glad, and just a sidebar, I'm really glad A&M didn't lose that game to Arkansas, or else that would have been, we would have had to go scrub all of our episodes.
Yeah, for all the times we just talked down about Arkansas this year.
Exactly.
They're not a good team, man. Like, at the end of the day, Arkansas is not good. They looked better against A&M for whatever reason. Ben Hicks, when he came in for Starkle, he looked actually pretty sharp. He threw some great throws, so maybe that will springboard them to a little bit more success going forward for the rest of the year.
Yeah, super just annoying that they play well in that game. But I don't think Vandy is going to play well in this game to get it back to Vandy at Ole Miss. How's that for a segue? Vandy is not Bama. I think John Rice... Plumlee is going to have another good game. They're going to use his legs. And although Vandy got its first win of the season this past week against Northern Illinois, I just don't think they're going to carry that momentum. They have played Georgia and LSU already this year, so I do think they might be a little bit better than their 1-3 record, but not by much. I like Ole Miss in this one. I'm going to watch Plumlee, see how he runs the ball. And so, yeah, I agree. I think Vegas and the model got this one right. So give me Ole Miss.
Perfect. And with that being said, we're going to jump into the hardest part of the episode each week for both of us, and that is the parlay partay. Last week, you had Iowa State covering against Baylor. That obviously did not happen. Baylor won outright. You had Oklahoma State covering against Kansas State, which was a dub. And you had OU over Texas Tech, covering over Texas Tech, which was also a dub. Which so you were did. Just that Iowa State game away from actually hitting on your parlay partay. Me, on the other hand, I had Arkansas against the spread versus A&M, which happened. I had Ohio State covering against Nebraska, which happened. But I had Cal covering against Arizona State, and Cal lost on Friday night. So I was also one game away from hitting. We're getting closer as the weeks go by. I think we're finally going to break through. One of us is going to hit our parlay this week. What's your parlay partay for week six?
Money.
Exactly.
Yeah, so just wanted to call back to the big question mark last week about OU and the massive spread over Texas Tech. OU looks phenomenal this year.
Yeah. I don't know. They're really good. I don't know if they're like top four.
I think they look good. I think Jalen Hurts, like the system, just their receivers are so fast and they get separation, and Jalen Hurts just puts it exactly where the ball needs to go. I am bullish on OU this year, which leads me into my parlay partay. Give me OU a 35-point favorite against Kansas. That is a wild spread, but I'm on the Sooner bandwagon.
And the model agrees. The model has OU by 36, so.
Hey, me and the model are fast friends. So give me OU covering against Kansas. I do not... You know what? As I'm saying this is probably a game that Les Miles wins just because it's freaking Les Miles. But
if that happens, that would be one of the biggest upsets in college football history.
Yeah, so it's probably not going to happen, which is why it's a part of my parlay partay because I'm going 3-for-3 this week. OU, 35-point favorite, beating Kansas. And then I am going to pull in that Auburn pick. I think Auburn's going to beat Florida that we just talked about. And then I'm really high on Oklahoma State this season in the Big 12. I've talked about him the past 2 weeks. Chuba Hubbard has been playing well. So I think Oklahoma State, who is an 8.5-point favorite, will cover that and beat Texas Tech this week.
Oklahoma State, they've been one of the most improved teams in the country looking at the model from last year. And they're actually 17th overall in the country this year in the model. So they're a good team.
Yeah, it's been fun to watch their highlights. I'm not going to lie to our listeners and say that I've sat down and watched Oklahoma State football. But I also noticed or read that Alan Bowman, the quarterback for Texas Tech, is out for most likely 8 weeks. So what happened this past week in Norman where Bowman was out before the game even started, and the backups came in, and they didn't look good against OU's defense. So that's why I'm going to take Oklahoma State in my third pick of my parlay. Sam, who are you partaying with this week?
So we actually have two of the same games here because I really like that Auburn line against Florida that's basically saying, hey, do you think Auburn or Florida is going to win this game, with it being only 3 points in favor of the Tigers? I think Auburn will win. I'm going to take Auburn to cover. I also like Oklahoma State. You just mentioned them. They really surprised me last week. I picked against them. I picked Kansas State to win that game outright, and Oklahoma State ended up covering. They won that game by, I think, 13 or 16 points. Chuba Hubbard, as you mentioned, he had another outstanding game. They've got a lot of weapons on the offensive side of the ball up there in Stillwater. So I'm going to go Oklahoma State covering against a pretty porous Tech defense this week. And then my last game is actually Pitt against Duke. So Duke is playing this game at home. They're favored by 6.5. But I have not overall been very impressed with Duke this year. Just I'm not going to say that I've watched all their games, but they've played some close games against some pretty okay competition. Their efficiency metrics are definitely better than Pitt, but Pitt has played some teams pretty close. UCF, they were playing Penn State close there for a good chunk of that ball game, and I think that they can keep that game against Duke close as well. So I'm going to take Pitt against the spread against the Blue Devils for my three-game parlay partay.
Nice. Maybe this time we'll hit pay dirt.
I think we have a good shot if we both hit on our two mutually agreed upon games. And the trick obviously will be whether Pitt or OU win their bets on their respective games. I'm excited. Well, I think we actually got a good shot this week, man.
Yeah, confidence is key when it comes to picking.
Exactly, because that's definitely what
out the window. It's all about confidence.
Yep, and that's why Vegas is a multi-billion-dollar industry. You're right there.
Exactly. Also, I said the word pay dirt, and I was listening to a high school football game on the radio because the high school that I do Young Life through hasn't won a game in 30 straight games, and they were winning.
Plano hasn't won a game in 30 games?
Plano West, yeah. They haven't won in 30 straight games, and I was listening to it on the radio because I saw that they were winning in the fourth quarter. I was like, oh, shoot, they might actually do it. And the radio guy for PI, the high school radio guy, I think he said pay dirt every 30 seconds. He's like, well, if he gets the ball here and takes it to pay dirt, like, speaking of the end zone, I'm like, what?
And that is why we have high school announcers.
And it's incredible. So, listeners, if you want an experience that doesn't live up to the everyday is Saturday experience, but maybe just like a step down, go listen to high school football radio. And it is
Plano ISD.
Just any high school football radio.
Hey, but I'll tell you what, I probably would have rather listened to the Plano ISD announcers than listening to Mark Jones and Dan Dabrowski call A&M Arkansas.
Oh my god! Last weekend, I agree, and that
give those guys a chance.
That is how you come full circle in podcasting. We have gone from I don't even know what I'm saying. That just blew my mind how you just brought that full circle. So, way to go, Sam.
I see opportunities and I take them, Cameron. You should know this by now.
That's true. We've known each other for like 7 years. Facebook reminded me of that this week.
Right on, bro. Hey, last closing thoughts from you as we wrap up this episode, Everyday Saturday.
Yeah, even though we alluded to this a couple times, that there's not a couple of really just standout games this week, listeners, it's another week of college football. This could be the week of the upset. West Virginia could beat Texas. Who knows what Tennessee will do to Georgia? The only way you will know is if you watch, because you don't want to be that guy that has to run to the nearest TV because they're not paying attention and they see it on Twitter. You want to be watching that whole game so you can say, I saw this whole thing unfold. So even though there's not a lot of standout games, you never know what's going to happen. And that's what makes college football great.
I don't think there's any other thing I could add to that beautiful speech that you just gave right there. So I'm just going to go ahead and wrap this thing up. Thank you all so much for listening. As Cameron has been loving to say, go leave us a 5-star review on the podcast app for iTunes. Share this with your friends. We're still 600-something listeners away from getting sponsored. So we need to see that growth, people. Model's doing well. We're doing well. You'll have a great week and enjoy college football.